Kickstart your day at 7 and get the news you need from the perspective you want. News One Now with Roland Martin, every weekday morning at 7 on TV One.
Good morning, I'm Roland Martin. Today on News One Now, the Congressional Black Caucus wraps up its annual conference with President Barack Obama honoring black women. GOP presidential candidate Ben Carson and Donald Trump may slam American Muslims. Also, we'll talk to Congressman Andre Carson, one of two Muslims serving in Congress, about Ben Carson's comment saying no Muslim should serve as president of the United States. Also, what are the most important issues for presidential candidates focusing on trying to reach black women? Well, we'll break that down for you with Essence Magazine's editor-in-chief, Vanessa DeLuca. Also, Fit Live Win Monday. We've got a brand new resistance workout to show you. Plus, we'll also break down the historic wins last night at the Emmy Awards. And also, Radio 1 founder Kathy Hughes has a street named after her in Washington, D.C. It's time for News 1 Now, TV 1. Last week, of course, we saw many people, thousands, come into Washington, D.C. for the 45th annual Congressional Black Caucus Foundation annual legislative conference. The focus conference ended on Saturday night with President Barack Obama giving the keynote address at the Phoenix Awards. For most of the speech, he talked about the contributions and achievements of African-American women. And in his speech, he detailed the role they have played, not only what's happening today, but also historically when it came to civil rights movement. So we're going to show you a chunk of that speech and also talk to our panel about that and whether or not there's going to be an agenda for black women that is specifically tailored towards them. Here's President Barack Obama.
Some of you know earlier this year, my family and I joined many in Selma for the 50th anniversary of that march. And as we crossed the Edmund Pettus Bridge, I held Miss Amelia's hand. And I thought about her and all the extraordinary women like her who were really the life force of the movement. Women were the foot soldiers. Women strategized boycotts. Women organized marches. Even if they weren't allowed to run the civil rights organizations on paper, behind the scenes, they were the thinkers and the doers, making things happen each and every day, doing the work that nobody else wanted to do. They couldn't always prophesize from the pulpits, but they led the charge from the pews. So we all have to be louder than the voices that are telling our girls they're not good enough, that they've got to look a certain way, or they've got to act a certain way, or set their goals at a certain level. We've got to affirm their sense of self-worth and make them feel visible and beautiful and understood and loved. And I say this as a father who strives to do this at home, but I also say this as a citizen. This is not just about my family or yours, it's about who we are as a people, who we want to be, and how we can make sure that America is fulfilling its promise, because everybody's getting a chance, and everybody's told they're important, and everybody's given opportunity. And we got to do more than just say we care, or say we'd put a woman on a $10 bill, although that's a good idea. We got to make sure they're getting some $10 bills, that they're getting paid properly. We've got to let our actions do the talking. It is an affront to the very idea of America when certain segments of our population don't have access to the same opportunities as everybody else. It makes a mockery of our economy when black women make 30 fewer cents for every dollar a white man earns. That adds up to thousands of dollars in missed income that determines whether a family can pay for a home or pay for college for their kids or save for retirement. or give their kids a better life. And that's not just a woman's issue, that's everybody's issue. I want Michelle getting paid at some point. When women of color aren't given the opportunity to live up to their God-given potential, we all lose out on their talents. We're not as good a country as we can be. We might miss out on the next Mae Jemison or Ursula Burns or Serena Williams or Michelle Obama. We want everybody to be on the field. We can't afford to leave some folks off the field. So we're going to have to close those economic gaps that hardworking women of all races, and black women in particular, can support families and strengthen communities and contribute to our country's success. It's why we're expanding paid leave to employees of federal contractors. And that's why Congress needs to expand paid leave for more hardworking Americans. It's good for our economy. It's the right thing to do. No family should have to choose between taking care of a sick child or losing their job. And just as an aside, what's not the right thing to do, what makes no sense at all, is Congress threatening to shut down the entire federal government if they can't shut down women's access to Planned Parenthood. That's not a good idea. Congress should be working on investing things that grow our economy and expand opportunity and not get distracted and inflict the kind of self-inflicted wounds that we've seen before on our economy. Mass incarceration rips apart families. It hollows out neighborhoods. It perpetuates poverty. We understand that in many of our communities, they're under-policed. The problem is not that we don't want active, effective police work. We want and admire and appreciate law enforcement. We want them in our communities. Crime hurts the African-American community more than anybody, but we want to make sure that it's done well and it's done right and it's done fairly and it's done smart. And that's why in the coming months, I'm going to be working with many in Congress and many in the CBC to try to make progress on reform legislation that addresses unjust sentencing laws and encourages diversion and prevention programs, catches our young people early, and tries to put them on a better path, and then helps ex-offenders, after they've done their time, get on the right track. It's the right thing to do for America. I want to repeat, because, you know, somehow, you know, this never shows up on Fox News. I want to repeat, because I've said it a lot, unwaveringly, all the time. Our law enforcement officers do outstanding work in an incredibly difficult and dangerous job. They put their lives on the line for our safety. We appreciate them and we love them. That's why my task force on 21st century policing made a set of recommendations that I want to see implemented to improve their safety, as well as to make sure that our criminal justice system is being applied fairly. Officers show uncommon bravery in our communities every single day. They deserve our respect. That includes women in law enforcement. We need more of you, by the way. We've got an outstanding chief law enforcement officer in our Attorney General, Loretta Lynch. We want all our young ladies to see what a great role model she is. So I just want to repeat, because somehow this never gets on the TV. There is no contradiction between us caring about our law enforcement officers and also making sure that our laws are applied fairly. Do not make this as an either-or proposition. This is a both-and proposition. We want to protect our police officers. We'll do a better job doing it if our communities can feel confident that they are being treated fairly. Hope I'm making that clear. Hope I'm making that clear. We need to make sure the laws are applied evenly. But if our history has taught us anything, It's taught us that when we come together, when we're working with a sense of purpose, when we are listening to one another, when we assume the best in each other rather than the worst, then change happens. Like every parent, I can't help to see the world increasingly through my daughter's eyes. And on that day, when we were celebrating that incredible march in Selma, I had Ms. Amelia's hand in one of my hands, but Michelle had Sasha's hand, and my mother-in-law had Malia's hand, and it was a chain across generations. And I thought about all those women who came before us, who risked everything for life and liberty and the pursuit of happiness, so often without notice, so often without fanfare. Their names never made the history books. All those women who cleaned somebody else's house or looked after somebody else's children or did somebody else's laundry and then got home and did it again and then went to church and cooked, and then they were marching. And because of them, Michelle could cross that bridge. And because of them, they brought him along, and Malia and Sasha could cross that bridge. And that tells me that if we follow their example, we're going to cross more bridges in the future. If we keep moving forward, hand in hand, God willing, my daughter's children will be able to cross that bridge in an America that's more free and more just and more prosperous than the one that we inherited.
Let's break this down with our panel. Catalina Byrd, media consultant and radio host on WEAA in Baltimore. Gianno Caldwell, Republican strategist. And Law and Victoria Burke, managing editor of Politics365.com. So, folks, the president talked about, obviously, the impact of women and your thoughts about that and this call for an actual agenda that speaks to where black women stand right now in the country.
Well, his agenda should start at the White House because there's a pay gap, a 13% pay gap at the White House between men and women, which the Washington Post reported on back in 2014. I think the average male at the White House makes like $88,000, the average woman makes $78,000. So if the president wants to talk about these things, this is one of the reasons why I tend to avoid the CBC dinner when he's there, because he tends to get up and say something that he's not doing. And of course, we had to stop whining and complaining back in 2011. Obviously, we're far from that. He has done some things since that speech, but quite frankly, when politicians get up and make these speeches, that's great, but they really should check themselves in terms of their own, you know, in terms of where they can control those types of issues. And the White House is where he can do that.
That's a great point. And to piggyback off that, that same agenda or landscape we saw in the Senate when they were talking about equal pay for women. I think right. If Democrats were really interested in doing something for women in terms of fairness and equality, which I agree with the president, there should be fairness and equality. They shouldn't have voted against the Fair Paycheck Act of 2011 under the 111th Congress. So if they were really serious about that thing, people like Senator King would not have voted against it. What we have to do is go beyond the rhetoric and the campaign speeches, as we kind of saw with President Obama and the talking points, and work on issues that are going to positively impact the black community, specifically the Democratic Party putting forth a pro-black agenda, which we really don't see.
Well, I, unlike the CBC and my colleagues here, know that the president can't fix everything overnight, and so I think that he's making strides in that. But what I was most pleased about in his remarks is the fact that he acknowledged that women have been at the forefront of these movements before.
That black women.
And it reminded me of when we were in Baltimore at Coppin State University right after the passing of Dr. Height, that Congressman John Lewis came to Baltimore and spoke on that same thing, how oftentimes Dr. Height was the only woman in the room. And for years, nobody gave her credit for that movement. You know, I get beat up on all the time when I say it here, that sexism runs deeper than racism. But we have always been a part of these movements, and we don't always get credit for. And so for the president to make that statement, I think, was very important for black girls and black women everywhere.
I love the fact that he brought that part of the speech up. That, to me, was the favorite part of the speech, because quite frankly, when we pull the curtain back on these organizations, the NAACP, National Urban League, NAN, we see a bunch of women back there running around doing the work. And we see a guy that's out in the front.
That's quite work, but see, the thinking and the strategy, too. I mean, let's not diminish
our contribution. I mean, Tamika Mowry, I mean, we can name the names of the people we've seen running around doing the action contact with people. That's why Black Lives Matter I like, because they have three women who created it and run the strategy. So I love that part of speech. That part of speech was perfect.
But again, we run into this point where there's a lot of talking points. You're talking about things like voting rights. It's a good talking point, but at the end of the day, what are you doing to make black folks better? What are you doing to help black women move forward?
I would probably say he's probably done more on that than Republicans have.
When you say these things, what you have to keep in mind is the fact that the Democratic Party wants to continue to guarantee a black constituency. It's their largest constituency.
What I can guarantee is that Republican-led legislatures have put forth some of the most onerous voter restriction and voter suppression laws. What I can guarantee is that in North Carolina, it took a lawsuit to sue them over their particular voting bill. What I can guarantee is you're seeing the same thing in Alabama and in Texas and in Florida. What I can guarantee are efforts to remove folks from the voter rolls like Governor Scott tried to do in Florida. Mm-hmm. All those are Republicans. And so if you're going to bring up voting, you better accept what's really happening.
Let me give a better understanding of where I come from. I come from the south side of Chicago. In Cook County, there's a lot of voter fraud. It has been for years. So when you talk about things like voter ID, like providing identification, for me, it makes sense because that's what has happened.
So let me ask you a question. So moving polling locations from easy to access places to less access, is that a good idea?
Well, depending on the...
No, hell no, that's a good idea. No, it's not.
Is it a good idea
to sit here in Alabama to say you must have a voter ID, but they're going to close 46 out of 50 driver's license offices, only leave 4 open in the state?
Okay.
Does that make sense?
We have to make sure it's easy for people to vote. Here's the deal.
The Republicans are making it easier to vote.
You're going to bring up as Republican strategist, voting rights, you better have something as a Republican to defend yourself on, and frankly, they don't. And the other pieces is here, Sensenbrenner, Wisconsin, Republican, has put forth a bill to restore those pieces of the Voting Rights Act, and the Supreme Court struck down, and many Republicans have failed to sign on as co-sponsor. Why?
This is the truth of the matter, Roland. When you're talking about voter IDs,
I said voter suppression. Don't just bring up voter ID. I'm saying that one ain't gonna fly. Coming up, I'll talk with Sandra Bland, her mother, at the CDC convention, and also what did Ben Carson say about Muslims not being able to serve as president of the United States? We're gonna break it down. News One Now, TV One. Back in a moment.
Wherever you are, we are your centerpiece for black thoughts in America. It's News One Now with your host, Roland Martin.
Among the many speakers at this year's Congressional Black Caucus Foundation conference was Sandra Bland's mother, Geneva Reed Veal. Her passion to keep Sandy Bland's memory alive was apparent, and I had a great conversation with her about really what her goal is to make sure America remembers her daughter.
You are in a sorority that folks don't want to join.
I'm not.
No. And the sorority I'm speaking of, that is that sorority fraternity of parents who've lost their children. A year ago, you would not have been at Black Caucus sitting on a panel talking about the loss of a child.
That is correct. That is absolutely correct. And the dues that you have to pay to be in this club, they are very high. And so to be here now on this panel for this situation, it is overwhelming, it is tough, but it's necessary. It's necessary. Sandy was 28, but she was my baby. And so I will not stop until we find out what happened to her. Because what's been told, we don't believe it. Mm-hmm. And this panel allows my therapeutic healing to be able to come out and talk about her. Her memory will not ever leave this place. She said she wanted to do many things, said she wanted to be international, said she wanted to change history. She's doing that. So now Sandy Speaks is speaking from the other side, even louder than she did when she was here.
Well, that was what was so amazing and surreal. Looking at her Facebook videos, looking at this Instagram post, and literally while we're covering her death, she's speaking at the same time about the very issues that surrounded her death.
Yes, sir, she was. And that's one of the comforts of my heart. Sandy left here with the belief that what was wrong was wrong, and what was being done to her was wrong, and it's got to stop. She put a public platform out there. Before Sandy's death, a few people knew Sandy. Now, the world knows Sandy. So she is international. She's not here with us, but she's here with me. And I now have to take the banner and run with it, because I'm not shutting up, and I'm not sitting down. I'm going to keep talking until things change.
These sort of sessions are important because, one, you're talking with other lawyers, you're talking with other activists, but also you're talking with folks who want to be foot soldiers in this battle. And so what has that meant to you, folks who have reached out, who never knew your daughter? I mean, I got a chance to meet her one time.
I know.
And those folks saying, we're walking with you.
Yes. The folk that are saying they're walking with me and have shown me that they're walking with me, my God, it's the most awesome thing in the world. The folks who are saying they're walking with me but maybe in a different capacity, that's okay too. It's all very much received by the family. And when I tell you, it blesses my soul. It allows me to get up every day and say, okay, well, if they're in Georgia doing this, and they're in D.C. doing that, and they're in Pennsylvania doing that, and they're in Virginia doing that, I have to get up. So now I have to get up and do what I have to do. This hand, four fingers, the thumb, they all have different functions. So to see the world internationally saying, Mother, we're with you. This is not right, and we're tired. So this is not even about Sandy anymore. This is about those no-name deaths that we've heard about. This is their blood that's swirling around, because their name didn't make it to your show. It didn't make it to TD Jakes. Didn't make it to all of these other national platforms. So this is who this is for. Their blood is crying out. It's got to stop. And so internationally, nationally, if you're with me, God bless you. I'm overwhelmed, and I have to maintain my thoughts every day and say, God, thank you for giving me the wisdom and the ability to get up and move. Because some days I don't want to, because I miss her so much, you know. But the support has been overwhelming, and I have to just keep walking with him and trusting him.
Last question. What do you want to say to those police officers out there who see their fellow police officers doing the wrong thing, pulling folks over for the wrong reason, but they say nothing?
To those officers who see it, you see the wrong, and you're not saying anything, put yourself in that person's shoes that you're stopping inappropriately. Put your child in that person's shoes that you're stopping inappropriately. I am telling you, if you just did that with a second thought, some of these murders, some of these deaths would not exist. It wouldn't. Think about if it was you. That's my statement for the person who sees the wrongdoing and says nothing. What if it was you? Your son, your daughter, your wife, your brother. The pain, you can't even explain it to people. You can't even describe it. And so as your family member is taken away, your new normal, it's not nice. I don't like my new normal, but it's okay. It's okay.
Well, I can promise you, we won't stop covering these issues, and certainly we'll keep the pressure on.
Thank you.
I appreciate it. Thanks so much.
When we come back, Ben Carson says a Muslim should not be president of the United States. We'll talk to one of two Muslims serving in the United States Congress. That is Congressman Andre Carson, right here on News One Now on TV One.
Kickstart your day at 7 and get the news you need from the perspective you want. News One Now with Roland Martin, every weekday morning at 7 on TV One.
Dr. Ben Carson, over the weekend, slammed the idea of a Muslim serving as president of the United States. Check out what he said on Meet the Press.
Should a president's faith matter? Should your faith matter to voters? Well, I guess it depends on what that faith is. If it's inconsistent with the values and principles of America, then of course it should matter. But if it fits within the realm of America and consistent with the Constitution, mm-hmm. No problem.
So do you believe that Islam is consistent with the Constitution?
No, I don't. I do not. I would not advocate that we put a Muslim in charge of this nation. I absolutely would not agree with that.
And would you ever consider voting for a Muslim for Congress?
Congress is a different story, but it depends on who that Muslim is and what their policies are, just as it depends on what anybody else says.
Well, let's go to one of those two Muslims serving in the U.S. Congress, Andre Carson from Indiana. Congressman, how you doing?
Thanks for having me, Roland. Always an honor.
What do you make of those comments by Ben Carson, pretty much saying if you decide to run for president, forget about it. You should not be serve as United States president.
Well, I think it's like saying we shouldn't have a neurosurgeon or a veterinarian as president. It's ridiculous to me. Freedom of religion is a founding principle of our nation. The founding fathers established in Article 6 of the Constitution that there shall not be a religious test to hold public office. So I think that the comments made by Dr. Carson showed that he's unready to be the commander-in-chief of this great country because he does not respect Americans of all faith and background.
Do you believe comments like these, also Donald Trump, these constant attacks, this is a continuation of this attack on Muslims in this country to brand all of them as being violent and in essence should be frankly thrown out of this country or put in jails?
You know, I think it's troubling that any leading GOP presidential candidate is resorting to fear tactics to benefit his or her campaign. It took us too long to overcome the prejudice that we saw against electing a Catholic or even an African-American president. So people should be elected to office based on their ideas, not their religion or color of skin. And Dr. Carson's comments show that, quite frankly, he's out of touch with the American people. You know, Roland, a Gallup poll was conducted over the past summer, this past summer, that found that 60% of Americans would be willing to vote for a president who was a generally well-qualified person who happened to be a Muslim. So I think that says a lot about the shift that we're seeing in this country right now.
Gianno, do you defend Ben Carson's comment that a Muslim should not serve as president of the United States?
No, I wouldn't say that. I wouldn't defend the comments at all. What I would say that if the principles of that person's religion is consistent with the Constitution, as he said, as in women being able to go out in public without having hair garb or...
Yeah, but Gianno, you have some Christian churches that say women cannot wear pants in church.
That's
so
true.
How is that consistent with the U.S. Constitution?
That's true. You do have some churches that not within the mainstream of Christianity.
Actually, there's a hell of a lot of churches like that. And so should those...
It's not within the mainstream
Should those individuals be running for president?
Yeah, they should be able to run for president. But again, I said that is not within the mainstream of Christianity.
If it's in the mainstream of America, then it's all good. But here's what I don't understand. The Constitution says nothing.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Nothing about your religion.
This is what you got to keep in mind. This is a primary. It's a Republican primary.
No.
The strategy in which Dr. Carson is using in this particular situation is going to play to the base.
This strategy plays to bigots in the country.
That's right. No, the strategy plays to bigots in the country, which is what Donald Trump is doing. Ben Carson has said a series of stupid, dumb statements because Ben Carson is not very bright, even though he's a neurosurgeon.
That is so insulting.
Yeah. It's so insulting. Okay, Obamacare is worse than slavery. Okay, that's not a dumb statement.
Dr. Ben Carson is American hero.
A lot of people go into a lot of people go into a lot of people. You can take offense all you want. A lot of people go into prison straight and come out gay. That's Ben Carson. Now he's into bigotry.
Gianno, one of the greatest minds in this country.
On the phone. I have one of two American Muslims serving in the United States Congress, mm-hmm. and what that comment says is that Congressman Andre Carson, who I assume Congressman of no relationship to Ben Carson, who took the oath to serve in the member of Congress, what he is saying is he should not be president. So
Should, again,
right, well, you're putting so, me. No, you said, do I defend it? I said I don't defend it. And I know Congressman Andre Carson is a great guy.
Congressman Carson, shouldn't you be just like Gianna was outraged at what Lauren said? You are greatly offended that Carson, who's running for president, would make this kind of comment when you have American Muslims who vote for Republicans, who put George W. Bush. Who helped this campaign out in 2000 when they voted all across the country, namely in Michigan. Go ahead, Congressman.
Absolutely. A lot of Muslims, particularly second-generation and first-generation immigrants, were strongly supportive of George Bush. They gave greatly to his campaign. In a post-9/11 reality, that has shifted, but there are still a lot of Muslims who are involved with the Republican Party. And now the question becomes amongst Muslims is, how do we leverage our voting bloc to impact change, to creating our own super PACs, or even running more folks for public offices, school boards, city councils, mayoral efforts, gubernatorial efforts, congressional efforts, as we're seeing. And I think it's the same thing that we had to come to terms with decades ago, as the black community and other communities have done. And I think now we're seeing a shift. There are more and more Muslims who are becoming engaged in the political process. Just recently, Congressman Ellison and I held a leadership forum where Speaker Nancy Pelosi was there and other leaders were there. And Muslims were saying very definitively that we will no longer give to these political parties until efforts like the DCCC start to actively recruit Muslims to run for congressional seats.
Shelley, take my iPad, please. I want to end this because I want people to understand. You mentioned Article 6. This is what it says.
Can't read the Constitution.
No religious test shall ever be required as a qualification to any office or public trust under the United States. Those were largely, many of them, Christians who put that in the U.S. Constitution. It is clear, and many conservatives who love talking about
the Constitution,
strict constructionists might want to read
it.
Congressman Carson, I appreciate it. Thank you so very much. When we come back, we're talking about the issue of resistance bans on Fit, Live, Win. Plus, we'll also break down for you folks the power of black women when it comes to voting right here on News One Now TV One.
The first step is to join the movement.
Begin to mobilize and move people to action now.
Step number two, roll out.
The way I roll is, when you've shown one time you can do it, no excuses after that.
We're your centerpiece for black thoughts in America. It's News One Now with Roland Martin. Roland Martin.
The most powerful voting bloc in America, black women. You look at the results from 2008 and 2012. The Black Women's Roundtable and Essence Magazine teamed up to conduct the Power of the Sister Vote poll to find out what black women want candidates to concentrate on during this election. I talked about it with Vanessa DeLuca, editor-in-chief at Essence, and also Lauren was on the panel as well, plus Melanie Campbell, convener of the Black Women's Roundtable. Here's our conversation.
Black women are actively engaged in the process of voting. And based on our panel, we found that 99% of the people who responded were already registered to vote, plan to vote again, and are really seeking the candidates to address the issues that are of most importance to them, that are top of mind. They all that have to do with our quality of life. So as long as we could care about affordable health care, as long as we care about minimum wage, living wage, as long as we care about college affordability, education, all of those issues are of importance to us, no matter who is sitting in that seat.
Not only one of the reasons why black women are the target, not just in politics, but you could talk about when it comes to advertisers as well, because it also deals directly with the pocketbook, the number of single-family households, who controls, in essence, the pocketbook in those households. And so politicians as well as advertisers both should be saying the same thing. If I'm trying to reach African-Americans, frankly, they got to go through black women.
Yes, we are the influencers as well when it comes to voting. We talk about the fact that we drive the vote, but we also the influencers of our families. We get the men to vote. We get our children to vote. We get our nieces and nephews to vote. And so what we know is that if black women are motivated by our issues being addressed, and that was one of the things that the poll showed us, that it's about the issues, it's about who is speaking to those issues, and they let us know what it is that is important to them.
Let's talk about issues. First, in, I'm going to go through 1 through 10. Affordable health care came in at 49% as a number one issue. Living wage, jobs, 43%. College affordability, 38%. Quality public education, 38%. Criminal justice reform at 37%. Police reform at 21%. Right to reproductive choices, 17%. Expanding voting rights, 16%. Then you have earned sick time, paid family leave, 14%. Entrepreneurship opportunity, 12%. Immigration reform, 8%. Other, 6%. It's interesting, Lauren, when I look at these issues here, I would probably say the top six when you had the Republican debate on Wednesday completely ignored. And I was talking to a high-ranking Republican National Committee official who said there's no group they do worse with than black women.
Yeah.
They said black women hate the Republican Party.
Hey, well, that's because their issues are not addressed. Of course, that reflects, too, not just black women, but African Americans in general, really no specific.
No. But this person said black women really can't stay in the Republican Party. And this was a Republican.
Right. Well, that's the thing. And if black women can't leverage their power within the Democratic Party, see, to me, the Republican thing is a reflection of the fact that, of course, blacks are over-indexed in the Democratic Party. So we'd have to leverage on these issues for it to really matter. I think sometimes these issues don't necessarily matter in the Democratic Party. But you're right. I mean, obviously, Republicans are not addressing any of these directly. We saw last night that none of those came up. I mean, even things like education didn't come up last night. So to me, it's an issue where we have to leverage not only the fact that we're over-indexed, black women are over-indexed, we have to leverage the specific issues with both parties.
But as for the issues that sisters are saying they want candidates to focus on, reducing taxes, improving the relationship between community and law enforcement, increasing minimum wage, eliminating mandatory minimum drug sentencing, and protecting voting rights. But it's interesting that at 74%, reducing taxes is that. If I'm a Republican, I'm saying, what? That's number one?
Hmm. Yeah, I mean, listen, these are issues that are about quality of life. It's about making a better life for our families, and it makes perfect sense to us that this audience would say that reducing taxes, I mean, every time that we have to go into our pocket for something that doesn't impact positively on our families, it's a concern. And so I wanted to go back to what you were saying about the debates. It was interesting in our poll that 18% of the people who responded said that they're not necessarily wedded to Democrat or Republican party. It's really about who is going to address the issues that are most concerned to her. And no one should feel that the black vote is locked, and no one should feel that it's secure, but everyone should feel that they have to address some of these issues if they're willing to leverage this huge voting block.
And Roland, the millennials really stood out. 26% of them don't identify with any party. So when you look at trying to have a long-range trajectory of power politically, you need to notice that there's a different trend going on when it comes to our party identification. So it's an opportunity, and what we're doing is we're engaging all the parties as it relates to not just this poll, but what we're doing following this, which is also a candidate survey that we've sent to everybody.
All right, where can folks read the full poll information?
You can go on Essence.com, obviously on Black Women's Roundtable, and continue to follow up the hashtag #WeDecide.
All right, appreciate it. Thanks a bunch.
Thank you so much.
We come back more News One Now on TV One.
Kickstart your day at 7 and get the news you need from the perspective you want. News One Now with Roland Martin every weekday morning at 7 on TV One.
Probably used resistance bands before, but you've never used them like this. TrueForm combines 4 simple steps to give you a workout guarantee to increase your speed, quickness, and strength. For our Fit Live Win segment here on Mondays, every Monday, Chris Cranky, right?
Crank.
The inventor. He's a Muslim.
No, I'm not.
All right. The inventor of TrueForm joins me now. So what is TrueForm?
Well, TrueForm is an athletic resistance band training product that comes with your own pair of shoes.
All right.
They're patented, designed to where you connect resistance bands directly to the shoe. Therefore, you can add resistance to your everyday movements as far as fitness related athletes.
All right, so let me see the shoe. So instead of having a band and you're attach it to your ankles or whatever.
Exactly.
And so you have them where, so you can just do your normal workout with it.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
Or like instead of doing all this damn running around, I can just walk to the store with it.
There you go.
Okay.
This person, yes.
All right. So when did you create this?
I was coming up with the idea in around 2011. Just, you know, kind of worked hard and trying to refine the product. Eventually, in 2013, that's when I incorporated. 2014 was the first years of sales, and, you know, 2015 would just continue to grow.
And you have different bands?
Yeah, so different bands. It comes with six different resistant bands. Let me pull it out here in my little fun bag.
Yeah, and any of these size 10 and a half?
Yeah, well, absolutely.
Is that a 10 and a half?
You can get you a set.
I test all the products on the show to make sure they legit. So, okay, so what's the deal here?
So the resistant bands come with the product. You get six different tensions. This is five of them. They go from lightest all the way to heaviest.
And they attach, okay, roll the video again. I want to see that. They attach to your waist. What's the deal?
So you put it comes with a belt. So you get the one size fit all belt. You put this on, connects the resistant bands directly to the shoe. So therefore, you kind of like your own resistance.
Really?
Mm-hmm.
All right.
Wow.
Mm-hmm. Wow, that's pretty interesting.
Mm-hmm.
Pretty interesting. So what does it give you that you can't get if you're just doing a normal exercise?
Well, see, you're adding resistance to the running motion or to movement.
So what does resistance add? What does it do for you?
Oh, well, I'll tell you the testimonies that we have. Athletes are getting quicker, faster, and stronger. We had one kid, he went from a 4.7 to a 4.4 in just 7 weeks of training with this product here.
There's hope for you, Henry.
And he improved so much that he ended up getting a full scholarship. So those are the type of things that's coming back. We have kids that increase their strength, you know, upwards of 150 pounds just by training with this product.
Really?
Mm-hmm.
Really? Cool. All right. Now, where can folks get this?
Simply go to www.getmytrueform.com. And you can go on the website. You can see videos. We have over 170 videos online on our YouTube channel. And simply just go to the shop button and purchase a set.
Okay, cool. Actually, that's pretty cool there. So, all right, y'all. I told y'all like with tech stuff. So I'm gonna test this. I'm gonna see if he's right. See what kind of resistance he gives you. And then I'm gonna report back.
Please do.
All right. Don't have me talk about you on Twitter.
No.
So the website is getmytrueform.com.
Absolutely.
All right. Pretty cool, Chris.
Mm-hmm. Thank you.
I appreciate it. Thanks a bunch.
All right.
Hold tight right here, okay, folks. Of course, last night the Emmys took place, and it was a huge night for Black women, historic night with Viola Davis winning, of course, Best Actress Emmy, and aired on Fox Television. And so the trio of victories ties a record set in 1991 for the most acting Emmys awarded to Black women in a single year. Regina King won Best Supporting Actress in Limited Series for her role in American Crime. This is her first Emmy. Uzo Aduba won her second straight Emmy as Best Supporting Actress in a Drama Series for her role as Crazy Eyes in the Netflix series Orange is the New Black. And as I said, Viola Davis became the first Black woman to win an Emmy for Best Actress in a Drama Series for her role on ABC's How to Get Away with Murder. Here is Viola in her speech.
And the Emmy goes to Viola Davis, How to Get Away with Murder.
Emmy win and nomination for Viola Davis, who is a graduate of Juilliard.
In my mind, I see a line. And over that line, I see green fields and lovely flowers and beautiful white women with their arms stretched out to me over that line. But I can't seem to get there no how. I can't seem to get over that line. That was Harriet Tubman in the 1800s. And let me tell you something. The only thing that separates women of color from anyone else is opportunity. You cannot win an Emmy for roles that are simply not there. So here's to all the writers, the awesome people that are Ben Sherwood, Paul Lee, Peter Nowak, Shonda Rhimes, people who have redefined what it means to be beautiful, to be sexy, to be a leading woman, to be black. And to the Taraji P. Hensons, the Kerry Washingtons, the Halle Berrys, the Nicole Beharis, the Megan Goods, to Gabrielle Union, thank you for taking us over that line. Thank you for the Television Academy. Thank you.
Quite an emotional moment. Another emotional moment was when Tracy Morgan walked on stage at the Emmys last night.
Thank you. Thank you so much. I miss you guys so much. Last year, Jimmy Kimmel sat on the stage and said, we'll see you back here next year, Tracy Morgan. Well, Jimmy, thanks to my amazing doctors and the support of my family, my beautiful new wife, I'm here. Standing on my own two feet. And God bless all of you for your love, your prayers, and the positive thoughts over the past 15 months. Thank you. I'm honored to be at the Emmys. I've always have been honored to be here. It's been a long road back. I suffered a traumatic brain injury that put me in a coma for 8 days. When I finally regained consciousness, I was just ecstatic to learn that I wasn't the one who messed up. Only recently I've started to feel like myself again, so, which means a whole lot of y'all women gonna get pregnant at the after party.
Also, folks, there were some other Emmy winners there. Please go to that. I'll pull it up. Bessie also won as well, and so that was pretty cool there. You also did Cicely Tyson win as well for a guest starring role? They showed it, but I couldn't quite make out exactly what in the world they were doing.
I know I was calling for it ever since that episode.
Oh, no.
I got to go back.
From the moment she dropped it, I said, yo, she should win. I knew she was going to get nominated. What y'all make of Viola Davis' speech?
That was great.
It was beautiful. She called out her sisters. I mean, that and the emotion that you see in Taraji and Carrie's face when they go to the audience, it's real because, I mean, they are part of, much like how black women in media and in politics, they are part of a very small circle in a big sea of whiteness and the opportunity that is not there that Viola spoke of. So that was very real for all of them, and I think it was beautiful.
Yeah, no question about it. I think that there is more diversity needed in Hollywood, and I think that she spoke to something that's very real and resonates with a lot of people, especially those that are trying to break into the scene. So I'm thankful to see her win, and I hope to see more of our sisters and brothers win in their notable work.
Yeah, it reminds me of when Denzel Washington won for Glory, so the same type of speech. It was great.
As I said, other winners, Queen Latifah and Monique won for Outstanding TV Movie with Bessie, and Reg E. Kathy won Outstanding Guest Actor in the Drama Series for his work in House of Cards.
That's great.
When we come back, we'll show you also the naming of a street honor for Kathy Hughes, founder of Radio 1, right here on News 1 Now, TV 1.
What's happening? I'm Will Packer. Y'all know me. Ride Along, Think Like a Man, Taker, Straight Outta Compton. New show on NBC called Truth Be Told. Listen, you're watching News 1 Now with Roland Martin, my frat brother, on TV 1. Don't change a thing.
Okay, you might want to get close to your radio.
My deal is we can have an honest conversation where both sides have some issues.
I love it.
I want to officially welcome you to News 1 Now with Roland Martin.
This weekend in D.C., Radio 1 founder Kathy Hughes was honored with a naming of a street corner right here in Washington, D.C. Here was some of the ceremony of the 8th Street Festival this Saturday.
We're here on 4th and 8th to celebrate a Washington icon. The impact she had on Washington, D.C., the community, the citizens, the hard work that she's done.
On this day, Saturday, September 19th, 2015, and forever forward, this corner shall be called the Kathy Hughes Corner.
This corner is the foundation on which all of our companies are based and built.
We would not be the largest black-owned media company in the world today had it not been for the residents of the 8th Street corridor. You all built my company. You all loved me. You inspired me. You circled around me. You saw to it that I was protected.
When she first moved over here, we helped with the station. And we was talking like a community activist, go out and tell people and fundraise, whatever we had to do, you know.
Ms. Hughes did a lot for this area. When we were here, it was drug infested. We walked the streets. We would talk to the people on the corners, let them know that change was coming and we were going to bring the radio station here. So we just wanted to make sure they knew we were coming before we came.
So often the community feels that if you succeed, you will forget. I have never forgotten. I never want to be disconnected. I just want to say that what this corner and the legacy of Radio One proves is that one person can make a difference.
All right, big shout out to Kathy Hughes there. Thanks so very much. All right, folks, birthday shout out time. Let's go. Jason Derulo turns 26. Wale turns 31. Alfonso Ribeiro from The Fresh Prince turns 44. Wale, okay, gotcha. And so Alfonso's a great golfer. Happy birthday to him. Tomorrow, we'll preview the Pope coming to D.C.
Wherever you are, we are your centerpiece for Black thoughts in America. It's News One Now with your host, Roland Martin.